ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय देवेष्वतनिलीनेषु बालिर्वैरोचनापुरीं देवधानीम् अधिष्ठया वशं निन्ये जगत्त्रयम्. When the demigods had disappeared, Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochan, entered the heavenly kingdom, and from there he brought the three worlds under his control. Tam Vishwa Jayanam Shishyam Bhrigava Shishyavatsala Satena Hayamedhanam Anubratam Ayajayan. The Brahman descendants of Bhrigu, being very pleased with their disciple who had conquered the entire universe, now engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We have seen in the dispute between Maharaj Prithu and Indra, then when Maharaj Prithu wanted to perform 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, Indra wanted to impede him. For it is because of such great sacrifices that Indra was made the king of heaven. Here the Brahman descendants of Bhrigu decided that although Bali was situated on the throne of Indra, he would not be able to stay there unless he performed such sacrifices. Therefore, they advised Bali Maharaj to perform at least as many Ashwamedha yagyas as Indra. The word Ayajayan indicates that all the Brahmins induced Bali Maharaj to perform such sacrifice. The Brahman descendants of Bhrigu, being very pleased with their disciple who had conquered the entire universe, now engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8. Chapter 15, entitled Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets, text 33 and 34. In these chapters and those just before what we are reading today, we find Bali Maharaj, the king of the Asuras, how after the churning of the ocean of milk, they were, both sides, the Asuras and the Devas, were extremely eager to get this Amrita, this nectar, because it had such a powerful effect of making one strong, healthy, and long-lived. It was so valuable to them because it was so important. Whoever drank, whoever was given this supernatural power from this elixir would undoubtedly conquer all directions. So the greatest enemies became allies simply for the purpose of trying to get it. And ultimately, by the arrangement of the Lord, the devas got all the nectar. It was taken right out of the hands of the asuras by Mohini Murti. So the devas conquered all directions. And the asuras wanted to, they were very angry with this arrangement. Can you imagine? After all that churning, which took so much trouble, the asuras had all of it. Every drop of it. All they had to do is drink it. But they started fighting among themselves of who was most qualified to drink it first. It was considered a great honor to get the first. So they were fighting amongst each other. And at that time, Mohini Murti came and took it all away from them. Actually, they gave it to her by their own free will. They were so enchanted by her. And then Mohini Murti gave all of it to the devas. So they gained all this supernatural power beyond what they ever had before. The asuras were very upset. They attacked, and the devas annihilated them. Bali Maharaj was killed, the king. But Sukracharya, who was a descendant of Bhrigu Muni, a great race of Brahmins, he performed some special rituals, enchanted mantras, and actually brought Bali Maharaj back to life. And Bali Maharaj was so grateful. He felt so indebted that he served Sukracharya with so much humility and so much devotion. And he also served all of the Brahmins of the Bhrigu dynasty. In this way, he pleased them exceedingly. And they blessed him. They blessed him in such a way that he became more powerful than ever before. He was radiant, effulgent. And he gathered his armies together to march on Indra's kingdom. They surrounded it. Indra looked out, and just by seeing the effulgence of Bali and Bali's incredible enthusiasm to do whatever it took to get Indraloka, Indra didn't know what to do. He approached his guru, Brihaspati, and said, "Look at Bali and his people. They look like they could swallow the whole universe. See his enthusiasm. See the strength he has. What's happening? What are we supposed to do?" And Brihaspati, he was a mystic. He could see past, present, and future. He said that Bali Maharaj has served his guru very faithfully and pleased him. And he's also served the great Brahmins, the great souls. They have blessed him. There's nothing you can do. This is very interesting. More powerful than even the nectar. More empowering than this nectar that they fought over so much was the blessings of great souls. That as long as he has the blessings of these great souls, he has a power way, way, way beyond his own. You see, what the nectar can do is it can give, it can increase your own power. But Bali has accessed something much greater by getting the heartfelt blessings due to his humble, loving service to great souls. He's now empowered by God. It's not about him anymore. Because the guru and the great saints, they are carrying the power of God. And they have bestowed that power upon him. He's unstoppable. It's not just Bali. You're dealing with Brahma Tejas, the supreme power of the Brahmins, the great saints. Indra, don't even try fighting him. The nectar and nothing else is going to help you now. I advise you, disguise yourselves, run away and hide. Now, this is quite a big instruction for a kshatriya like Indra and all the devas.
Yes?
And that's all they could do. They disguised themselves, and by their mystic powers, they can really disguise themselves. They could change their forms. So the asuras could not recognize any of them. And they just slipped away and went into hiding places and waited. Brihaspati said, just wait, be patient. Time is not on your side. But at a certain time in the future, I can foresee that Bali Maharaj is going to displease his guru and the Brahmin race. And when that happens, he's going to lose all this potency and you will get everything back. And of course, in the future chapters, we read how Aditi, the mother of Indra and the Devas, was very pained at heart to see her children living like fugitives, just running away, being hunted for by the asuras. And they had nothing, absolutely nothing. They had no service. They had no property. They were just running and hiding. As a mother, this was very difficult. So with the guidance of Kashyapa Muni, her husband, she performed this payovrata by which the Supreme Lord would be her son. And Vamanadeva was, when the Lord wants, when he appears, he does so in such a way to teach so many lessons. He could have just taken everything away in a moment. But he wanted to do it in such a way that was instructive. Because Bali Maharaj gained his power by pleasing his guru, Shukracharya, who was a descendant of Bhrigu. So Vamanadeva was going to orchestrate his lila in such a way that he would but he would put Bali in a situation wherein to make the right choice, he would have to displease his guru and get cursed. So we know the story. Vamanadeva took 3 steps of land. He wanted 3 steps of land. He appeared as a dwarf. And Shukracharya told Bali, who was performing one of these yajnas that we're reading about today, Shukracharya said, don't give it to him. This little dwarf is actually Vishnu in disguise. And I can see the future too. With his first step, he's going to cover half the universe. With his second half step, the other half. And the third, you'll have nothing to give him. He will arrest you. Don't give him anything. You may have already promised, but according to Shastra, in emergency situations, you're allowed to break your promise, and this is an emergency situation. I am personally declaring it an emergency. And Shukracharya ordered him. And Bali Maharaj, very honestly, he said to his guru, this is a Brahmin too. This Vamana appeared as a Brahmin. I can't lie to him. I can't tell a lie. I've given my word of honor. And if he's Vishnu, then my grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, he was a great devotee of Vishnu. His great-grandfather wasn't, but his grandfather was. I will do it. He was willing to surrender everything. Now please understand, Bali Maharaj, he was not, maybe this may happen, maybe that. He knew for sure that if his guru cursed him, it would be, from a material perspective, it would be disaster. But to please the Supreme Lord, he was willing to do that. Because after all, a guru is supposed to teach you to surrender to the Supreme Lord, not reject the Supreme Lord. So Shukracharya was so angry, so displeased. He cursed Bali, you will lose everything. That's all that was required. He gave him the power, he took his power away. Now, this was a big step. Actually, Bali Maharaj making this decision was a bigger step than any of Vamanadeva's steps. Because Bali was dead, and Shukracharya brought him back to life. He owed him everything. Not only did he bring him back to life, but he gave him all his powers, all of his opulence, everything. And to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was willing to renounce that connection. This is why Bali Maharaj is a Mahajan. It's not that he just gave everything to Vamanadeva. What he renounced is inconceivable. But what he got back was even more inconceivable. You see, if you please Krishna, ultimately everything is adjusted. In the end, Vamanadeva gave him Sutala, a planet which was much, much more wonderful than Indra's in every particular way, in opulence, in beauty, in pleasure. It's also a spiritual place, very highly devotional, and Indra's always getting attacked. Sutala will never be attacked. Much better. And Vamanadeva himself became the doorkeeper. He became the servant so that Bali Maharaj could have the darshan of the Lord personally walking around every day. And then at a certain time, he would become Indra. And in the same time, at the end of this story, Shukracharya was exceedingly happy with Bali Maharaj and bestowed more blessings than he ever did before. He understood that he was wrong. His disciple was right. And Shukracharya said, whatever, Bali Maharaj made no mistake. Everything was absolutely perfect. So because he took this risk of pleasing Krishna, what was the result? His guru gave him more blessings than ever before. He became eternally famous as a Mahajan. He attained the ultimate perfection of unalloyed loving service to the Lord, Krishna Prema. He got everything. And plus, You got a better place than Indra. So sometimes the act of surrender is an act that appears to risk our particular situation. But Krishna says in Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. That declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never perish. Because he actually surrendered. He surrendered to the inner will of the Supreme Guru, or Krishna. And all the Brahmins and Shukracharya and everyone ultimately profusely blessed him. Srila Prabhupada explains, Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kuto. This is the power of pleasing the Guru. This is the power that Bali Maharaj had. This was his greatness. More than any other material consideration, how we are pleasing Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas. In this regard, today is the appearance of Sripad Ramanujacharya. I'd like to speak just a few incidents in his glorious pastimes that illustrate this principle of the power and the grace that comes when we please the Guru and great souls. It's very interesting. Ramanujacharya was born in Sri Purambudar, not too far from Kanchipuram, and was living in Kanchipur. And just by the arrangements of destiny, he was the student of one Yadava Prakash. Now, Yadava Prakash was a scholar, but he was a Mayavadi. And he was very antagonistic toward devotees and toward bhakti. And Ramanujacharya had this natural devotion in his heart. And Ramanujacharya used to hear about Yamunacharya, his beautiful prayers, his songs, his teachings, and it very affected him, although he never met him at the time. So Ramanujacharya, he was never moved away from the path of pure love. Even though Yadava Prakash was so antagonistic about it. And sometimes it was just so unbearable to hear what Yadava Prakash was saying. But Ramanuja was so respectful. One time he was massaging him. And Yadava Prakash recited a verse explaining that the Supreme Lord's eyes were pink like the rear end of a monkey. And as he was massaging his guru, hearing that, he started to cry. His teacher, not exactly his guru, but he started to cry. And Yadava Prakash felt the tears and said, "Why are you crying?" He couldn't lie. He said, "I don't like this example you gave." He said, "Well, this is what the scripture says. What is your understanding?" And Ramanuj, very, very humbly, he said, "It can be translated in a very different way. It means his eyes are pink like the beautiful lotus flowers that are blooming in the transparent lakes of fresh water." And his teacher became very angry. Because he's better than me. This is not right. So various incidents like this happened, but please know, Ramanujacharya was always respectful. After receiving permission, he would clarify the mistakes of his teacher. And his teacher was very upset. So much so that the teacher created a conspiracy to murder his student. Because he was thinking, this person is so intelligent and so bright, he's going to make everyone lovers of God. And this is completely what I'm against. Now, Ramanuja understood this. And with the help of others, he escaped. But he forgave his teacher and continued studying under him. He had his own master plan. One time, Yamunacharya, who was the acharya of all of Sri Rangam and the Sri Sampradaya, he came from Sri Rangam to Kanchipur. It was during some festival. And Yamunacharya from a distance saw Ramanuja. And he saw this boy, he has such a pure heart. He has such good qualities. He has so much love for the Lord. He could just see this by looking at Ramanuja. And he also heard about his good qualities. And he asked someone, is he still studying under this Yadava Prakash? They said, yes, he's still studying under him. And Yamunacharya was praying to Lord Vishnu, please free this young boy from this bad influence. Eventually, after some time, Yadava Prakash just got so frustrated with Ramanujacharya's brilliance for a different philosophy that he rejected him. He couldn't kill him, so he rejected him. So one day Ramanujacharya, he approached Kanchipurna to be his teacher. Kanchipurna, he was a very simple man from a Shudra birth. But every day, he had such enthusiasm to serve the deity in the temple, Bharadraj. He would spend the whole day practically in the hot season fanning Bharadraj. He would take a fan and dip it in water to make it real cool and just fan and sing songs. And he would go out and he would collect the best possible fruits and the best possible flowers and offer them to the deities and fan them and sing songs. That's all he did. He wasn't teaching people. He was just doing the humblest, simplest type of seva that actually anyone can do. But he did it with so much devotion. He had so much love. Love for God and love for all living beings. Sometimes he would just walk down the road and just look at the sky and smile. And the people of Kanchipur, most all the people, they loved him. Because he was totally non-envious. He was the well-wisher of everyone. Because he loved everyone, naturally people loved him. And they saw his devotion. It just brought so much life. But there were other people that hated him. They were spreading rumors that he was insane, that he was an imposter, he was just a fake, a fraud, he had no real devotion. And one of the main proponents of this blasphemy of him was Yadava Prakash. So Ramanuja invited Kanchipurna to his home and gave him a special seat. And Ramanujacharya wanted to wash his feet. And with folded hands, he said to Kanchipuram Ramanuja, he said, I want you to be my teacher. I beg you, please be a guru for me. Kanchipuram was so embarrassed by this. He said, how could this be? You are a Brahmin, and I am a Shudra. You are a learned scholar of all the scriptures, and I don't really know much of anything. How could I be your guru? How could I teach you anything? And Ramanujacharya, with such a sincere and devoted heart and folded palms, he said to Kanchipurna, he said, you love Vishnu, that's what I want. If being a scholar of the scriptures makes one proud and not able to understand a great person like you in all your simplicity, then I say, what is the use of knowing the scriptures? The whole purpose of knowing the scriptures is to be a humble servant of the servant of the servant of a great soul like you who loves God. You have understood the essence. Please give me instruction. Brahman, Shudra, all these things are external. The eternal reality of the soul is we're part of Krishna. We love Krishna. And you have achieved that liberation. Please instruct me. Hearing Ramanujacharya's understanding of the very essence of all religion, Kanchipurna was very happy. And it wasn't that he could instruct him in the fine subtleties of the philosophy of Vedanta. He gave him an instruction according to his own personal realization. He said, every day you should bring a jar of water to the temple and offer it to Vardraj. That's all. And Sripad Ramanujacharya took this order as his life and soul. That was his first priority in life. Every morning he would go to a well. It's a very special historical well with very pure water. And he would fill up a big jug and he would personally carry it on his shoulder from the well all the way to the temple and give it to the pujaris and place it before the deities. And this was his seva every day. Now Kanchipurna, because of the simple purity of his devotion, it was well known amongst intelligent people at that time that Varadraj, the Lord from the temple, would reveal his will through Kanchipurna. He would talk because deities, not everyone can hear a deity talk. But he would talk to Kanchipurna to reveal his desires to the rest of the congregation. And he was so satisfied seeing Ramanuja every day carrying this pot of water. Meanwhile, the news came to Yamunacharya. At that time, he was very old, and his health was declining. And he was praying so deeply to rescue Ramanuja from this Yadava Prakash. And he was always thinking about him. So one day he asked his devotees about Ramanuja. And they said, he's no longer taking lessons from Yadava Prakash. Now he's taking lessons from Kanchipurna. And Kanchipurna was a disciple of Yamunacharya. So he was so happy. Now he is in the association of the greatest of Vaishnavas. It appeared that Yamunacharya was going to leave the world. And all of his disciples were gathered together, crying and praying for his health. And suddenly it appeared he got better. And he turned to Mahapurna, one of his dearmost disciples, and said, "Please, go from Srirangam to Kanchipur and ask Ramanuja to come. I want his association. I want to see him." So Mahapurna took leave. It's about a 4 or 5 day walk. There wasn't trains or buses or cars or planes in those days. It was walking. So Mahapurna went all the way to Kanchipur. And there he met Kanchipurnam in the temple. And he asked, "Where is..." They were so happy to meet each other, two god brothers, Mahapurna and Kanchipurna. He said, "Where is Ramanuja?" He said, "There he is. He's coming with his pot of water just now." And Ramanuja came with his pot of water and offered it, a seva to the deity. And Mahapurna said that, "I have come as the messenger of Yamunacharya. He is requesting you to come. He wants to see you." Ramanuja said, "Let me just put the water in the right place and then I'll go immediately." He put the water down, offered it with some mantras. And Mahapurna, he said, "Well, you, what about your family and everything else?" He said, "When Guru calls, we must go." So they left immediately. 4 days it took them to reach Srirangam. All the while they were together, Ramanuja was inquiring submissively from Mahapurna about different stories of the Lord and different philosophical understandings. They crossed the Kaveri River and were planning to go directly to the ashram of Sripad Yamunacharya, but they saw large crowds. And these crowds were all weeping and crying. They asked, "What happened? Why are these crowds gathered?" And someone said, "You do not know. The whole world is now cast into darkness because Yamunacharya have left this world." The day that Yamunacharya left, he called all his grihastha householder disciples to him, many of them, to give them last instructions. He said, "You should always go to the temple and worship the Lord. Keep his name in your heart, keep his form in your mind. Never practice duplicity. Be honest. And always keep your devotion as the priority of your life." And then with great humility, he begged them, "Please provide for and maintain all my brahmacharis and sannyasis as long as you live." All his devotees performed kirtan, chanting God's holy names, offering prayers all around his bed as he left the world. When Mahapurna and Ramanujacharya heard this, Ramanujacharya immediately fell unconscious. It was unbearable that his guru has left the world. And Mahapurna was swaying in distress, but somehow he had to pacify Ramanuja And he sprinkled him with water and said, we must understand that everything is ultimately happening by the will of Lord Narayan. Then they proceeded to the place where Yamunacharya's body was laying down, and all the disciples and townspeople were gathered around it. Ramanujacharya asked a question to all those around. Three of Gurudev's fingers are clenched very tightly. Did he usually keep his fingers like this? They said, no, we have never seen this. He always kept his fingers straight. Ramanujacharya closed his eyes in a very prayerful state, and then he spoke. He said, I vow that I will spread the glories of Lord Vishnu and pure unalloyed love for Vishnu through bhakti throughout the entire land. When he said that, one of the fingers opened straight. Ramanuja then said, I vow that in order to philosophically establish the principles of pure unalloyed devotion as the highest of all spiritual truths, I will write a commentary of Vedanta Sutra called the Sribhasya. The second finger opened and stretched. And then Ramanujacharya said, in honor of the speaker of the Vishnu Purana, Parasara Muni, I will name a great Vaishnav Parasara. The third finger opened. And Ramanujacharya and the others, it was clear to them. These were the three desires of Yamunacharya that were not fulfilled in his life. And Ramanujacharya knew his heart and vowed to fulfill those three unfulfilled desires. People were astonished. They understood the very deep and high connection between the guru and disciple. Sripad Ramanujacharya went back to Kanchipuram. After some time in Sri Rangam, the devotees there, it was impossible to live with the loss of Yamunacharya because he was so empowered. He was so illustrious in his compassion and his knowledge and his wisdom and his everything. And they were so accustomed to living with him. Now, how is it possible for us to continue? We have to have a leader. And they all unanimously decided that the successor of Yamunacharya must be Ramanujacharya. He knew our guru's heart best of everyone. He proved that on that day. Just see how non-envious they were and non-competitive. There were all these great sannyasis and grihastas and scholars who were extremely empowered. They weren't fighting over who's going to be the next acharya. They were just thinking, what does our guru want? Who could best perform that service? And Ramanujacharya, he was fighting for it. He was somewhere else. He didn't even think about it. But they all accepted, because he's most qualified, he should be the Acharya. And something else that's very interesting. We don't find that Ramanujacharya ever had any personal association with Yamunacharya. There's hardly any record that he ever talked to him. Yamunacharya just saw him from a little distance. Ramanujacharya honored him and loved him, but there was really practically no physical association. Ramanujacharya, just by hearing the teachings of Yamunacharya and hearing the beautiful stotras that he gave his life and soul to him. And Ramanujacharya was never initiated. And in the Sri Sampradaya, initiation is a very serious thing. He was uninitiated. And he had practically no personal association at all. And here are these sannyasis and these other very, very great personalities who were living with him, initiated by him, his senior most people. And they're all calling for Ramanujacharya to be their leader. So they asked Mahapurna, please go and meet Ramanuja. Give him initiation and bring him back. So Mahapurna, he went to Kanchipura. And when he went to Kanchipura, Ramanujacharya immediately, he met him and begged him, please instruct me. And Mahapurna, he began to explain to him the holy scriptures. And Ramanujacharya asked for initiation. So Mahapurna, right on the bank of a river, set up a yajna and gave him the full initiation. So Ramanuja was a disciple of Ramanujacharya, of Yamunacharya, from the perspective of the physical ceremony. But because he had taken the grace, the mercy, the blessings of Yamunacharya so deeply to his heart, how he was honored. And then for many days, Mahapurna instructed Ramanujacharya in the path of bhakti in the holy scriptures. And Ramanujacharya served his guru so faithfully and devotedly. And they went back to Sri Rangam. And upon seeing, now I'm skipping a lot of the life of Ramanujacharya because I'm trying to focus on this guru-disciple relationship. By this time, Ramanuja was a sannyasi, and he was studying under Mahapurna. And it is explained that everyone in Sri Rangam was so deeply impressed to see the humility and the love in which Ramanuja served his guru. One day, Mahapurna said that it will be very helpful for you to receive a Vedic mantra, initiation into a Vedic mantra. And there is no one more qualified to give you this mantra and to explain to you the meaning of the mantra than Gostipurna, who is living in a village not too far away. Now here is another beautiful example. Mahapurna is his guru, and he's telling him that this other person is more qualified than me to give you the mantra. There was no envy. There was no competition. They were all working together for the higher purpose of Yamunacharya's mission. So Ramanuja walked, from what I understand, is something about 100 kilometers to this village, walked all the way there, bowed at the feet, prostrated himself at the feet of Gostipurna, and begged him, please, Mahapurna has sent me, my guru has sent me to receive this mantra from you. Now, Gostipurna was not at all inclined to give this mantra to anyone. Because the rule was, this mantra could not be given to anyone that had even the slightest trace of material desires in their minds. But Mahapurna ordered him. So Gostipurna said to Ramanuja, he said, come back another day. So Ramanujacharya was quite dejected, and he walked all the way back. And then some days later, he came again, and Gostipurna told him to come back another day. Ramanujacharya walked back and forth 18 times. This is how enthusiastic he was, how patient he was. And every time he was just sent away. After 18 times, Ramanujacharya was feeling, I'm so unqualified, I'm so sinful that I don't deserve this mantra, and my guru has asked me to, it's my guru's order to get the mantra, but I'm so sinful, I'm not fit to receive it. He began to cry. So this news came to Gostipurna. And he said, call Ra. And then the next time Ramanujacharya came, the 19th time, Gostipurna said, I will give you this mantra, but please hear this very carefully. This mantra must never be heard by anyone else. I do not see any person in the entire world fit to receive this mantra except you. By your determination, by your enthusiasm, by your purity of heart, you are the only one I see that is fit to receive this mantra. Anyone who hears this mantra will be liberated of all the sufferings of material existence and will attain the spiritual world. But it can never be touched by the lips of a person who has any material desires. So you must not ever give it to anyone. This is confidential. Then he spoke the mantra, 8-syllable mantra, to Ramanuja. Ramanujacharya was in ecstasy hearing this mantra. Then his guru explained something about the mantra to him, and he offered his obeisances to his Gurudev, and then took his leave to return to Sri Rangam. As he was walking, he began to meditate on the words of Gostipurna, that anyone who hears this mantra will go back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha. So he got this inspiration. And as he was passing through the town, he called out, I have most precious wealth, and please spread the word all over the town. Everyone should come to the temple courtyard, and I will give everyone
a most precious jewel. The word spread. Hundreds, thousands of people, because everyone likes free jewels. Thousands of people gathered. And there were so many, Ramanujacharya couldn't even see them all, so he had to climb to the tower of the temple so he could see everybody and everyone could see him. And they were all very, very eager. Sripad Ramanujacharya cried out in a very loud voice. He said, You are all more dear to me than my very life. Today, I am going to give you a mantra by which you will be liberated from all sufferings and returned to Vaikuntha. Now, everybody, listen carefully and repeat after me. And then Ramanujacharya, with all of his strength, he cried out this mantra. And all the thousands and thousands of people, after hearing the mantra, they felt so spiritually energized and so purified that as loud as they could, they all chanted the mantra. Then Ramanujacharya chanted again, and they did it again 3 times. And as all those thousands of people chanted this secret mantra, it was so tumultuous, it was filling this whole area. And Gostipurna, just minutes after he gives the secret mantra to Ramanuja with the condition that nobody should ever hear it, he's hearing this tumultuous resounding of thousands of people crying out the mantra. The people were so much in ecstasy. They were all bowing down and giving their hearts, thinking, we came to you for the broken glass of some mundane jewel, but you have given us the supreme jewel. You've given us the mantra to love Vishnu. They were so happy, so grateful. So Ramanujacharya decided to go and offer his obeisances, his respects to his guru, Gostipurna, before leaving. Gostipurna, he was boiling over with anger. He could not believe what just happened. And then Ramanujacharya has the nerve to come back and say goodbye to him after totally disobeying the most important instruction he ever gave anybody. And as soon as Ramanujacharya came into his room, Ramanuja bowed down, and Gostipurna was trembling. His eyes were red. He said, get out from here. I never, ever want to see your sinful face again. Get out from here. Today I have made the greatest offense by giving this mantra to such an unworthy, despicable wretch as you. Get out. Because of this offense, you will have to perpetually suffer in hell. Get out. Ramanuja stood there with folded palms, tears in his eyes. He said, my dear, worshipable, beloved Gurudev, I know very well that for my offense, I will have to suffer hellish conditions. But please understand my heart. You said that anyone who hears this mantra will go back to the spiritual world. Now all these thousands and thousands of people are going to go back to the spiritual world. And if all of them, all these beautiful people are going to go back to enjoy eternal life with the Lord, then it's a very small, insignificant price than one insignificant fallen soul like Ramanuja will have to go to hell. A little person like me going to hell, to bring thousands and thousands of people to Vaikuntha. It's a very small thing. I'm willing to do so. When he said that, Gostipurna began to cry. He stood up and he embraced Ramanujacharya. And he said, "You are better than me. I have never seen such compassion. I have never seen such magnanimous devotion. Today I accept you as my guru. Please, I beg forgiveness for my offenses to you." And Ramanujacharya fell at his guru's feet and said, "No, not like that." He said, "I am your servant. I am your disciple. It is only because of your potency of giving the mantra that it's your love, your devotion, your compassion of giving the mantra that all these thousands and thousands of people will return to the spiritual world. I'm just an instrument of your mercy." These are some of the beautiful lessons of in one sense, this story is a little like Bali Maharaj and Shukracharya. Even though they both displeased their guru and their gurus became very ferocious and even cursed them. Because it was for a higher principle. In both cases, the guru recognized the glory of their devotion, the glory of their compassion. And Ramanujacharya went back to Sri Rangam. During that incident, he brought two of his main followers, Dasarathi and Kuresh. They saw Ramanujacharya's willingness to even suffer hell and all consequences to show compassion to others. In fact, after Ramanujacharya gave the mantra to all the people, he embraced his two followers. And they saw Gostipurna's anger and they saw Gostipurna melt in ecstasy. One of those disciples who was the witness to Ramanuja's compassion was Kuresh. And we all know the story of him. We do not have time now to tell it. But he was also willing to give his life. When the king of the Chola dynasty had sent people to arrest Ramanujacharya and force him to either surrender to his theology or die, Kuresh begged his guru, Ramanuja, "You change clothes with me. I'm a grihastha with a wife, Andal. You put on the white clothes of a householder and let me take your saffron clothes, because the king doesn't know what you look like." Ramanuja was very resistant. Why in the world would he want to do this to his disciple? But his disciple, from his heart of hearts, it was his only desire. It was not an austerity for him. It was an honor. And Ramanujacharya could see the heart of Kuresh. By allowing him to do that, he was fulfilling his highest desire. And it would also make Kuresh not only famous throughout all of time, but it would make his example bring millions and millions and millions of people to the path of pure love. Kuresh went. In summary, he defeated all the scholars in the king's court And ultimately, the king was so angry that he, with red hot iron rods, had both Kuresh and Mahapurna's eyes burned out. And after beating them and burning their eyes out, Kuresh looked at the executioners. They were somewhere in the jungle when it happened. And with folded palms, he thanked them. "I am eternally indebted to you. You have allowed me to render such an intimate service to my Gurudev. I thank you." And he was so serious that the executioners, their hearts melted. They realized this man is truly a saint. He's not only forgiving us for what we've done after brutally beating him and burning his eyes out, he's not only forgiving us, he's thanking us. Because Kuresh's feeling is, you have facilitated me giving up my very eyes in the service of my guru. What a great honor. And this is how he was feeling. And he spent years, and that's the rest of his life. And Ramanujacharya felt so deeply, deeply indebted to Kuresh for his love. When Ramanujacharya found out about it, Kuresh sent messages, "Don't feel any pain. I'm not in pain. I'm happy. I couldn't be happier. You allowed me to serve you in such an intimate, loving way." But in Melkote, when Ramanuja heard about this, it was unbearable to him. He was in exile. He prayed to the Lord Narasingha on the hill, "It's too much what this king is doing to the Vaishnavas. Please, you know, do something." And Narasingha Dev did something. And even when Ramanujacharya requested Kuresh, "Please go to the Lord in the temple and ask for your eyes back," he sang all day, and Vishnu said, "I will fulfill any desire you have. What desire?" And Kuresh said, "My only desire in life is, please forgive the king and elevate him to Vaikuntha." So the king, who was so hateful, who had his eyes burned out, he was already dead. He was elevated to Vaikuntha eternally. Ramanujacharya said, "Please ask for your eyes back." He went back to the temple and again prayed and sang beautiful songs. And Lord appeared to him again and spoke, said, "I will fulfill any of your desire. What would you like?" He said, "Chaturgram, my disciple who rejected me and became totally envious, he's the one who convinced the king to try to kill my guru. And it's because of him my eyes were burned out. Please forgive him and give him entrance into your eternal pastimes in Vaikuntha." The Lord said, "Both of these people were already suffering hellish consequences, but I promised you to fulfill your desires, so he's in Vaikuntha now, in this spiritual world." Ramanujacharya sent him back again. One version of the story is that he said, "My Gurudev, I lost two things that belonged to him. Please restore it." And he got his eyes back. But according to most Sri Vaishnav scholars, it happened a different way. The Lord said, "What would you like?" And he said, "Why don't you ask for your eyes back? That's what your guru wants you to ask for." And he said, "If you want to fulfill my desire, I don't want my eyes back. What do I want to see in this material world anymore? Give me this benediction that the only thing I see within my heart is you and my Gurudev, Ramanujacharya." Said, "All right." So Sripad Ramanujacharya went. He heard about this, and he went on the altar, and he asked Kuresh, what is Vishnu wearing today?" He told him, he explained every flower on his body, what color cloth, what type of crown, what type of backdrop. Ramanuja asked, "What do you see in me?" He told him exactly every one of his features. Even though he was totally blind, ghastly blind. So it was true. He was always seeing the Lord and his guru. And Quraysh asked the Lord, "Please, let me return to the spiritual world and give the benediction that anyone who is close to me will also attain the spiritual world." He said, "I grant you this blessing." So they went, and all the devotees were crying that he's going to leave us. And they told Ramanujacharya, and he picked up his chadar, his cloth, and threw it in the air and started dancing in ecstasy. They said, "Why are you so happy? He's going to die." He said, "Didn't you hear? He got the benediction that anyone who's close to him is going to attain the spiritual world. I'm his guru, so I'm also close to him. So that means I get to go too." This was the humility of Ramanujacharya. On this day, let us offer our sincerest prayers at the lotus feet of this great Acharya and pray for his blessings. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.